Hello and welcome to another episode of Keeping It Real, the only podcast made by Chicago real estate brokers for Chicago real estate brokers. My name is DJ Paris. I am your host through the show, and we have a great interview with At Properties broker Susan Panazzo coming up in just a few. So again, we always start the show with a thank you to our listeners. So we very much appreciate as we come up on our 60th episode, and we have now thousands of listeners. We're super grateful that you like the show and it's resonating with you. But of course, the show is for you, so we need to know what you would like us to do going forward. People you think we should interview, topics you want discussed, let us know. And there's a couple ways to do that. First of all, you can always visit our website, keepingitrealpod.com. You, of course, can listen to every episode we've ever done right from your browser, but also you can send us suggestions. So there's a contact form. Let us know who we should be interviewing and what we should be talking about. Also, hit us up on Facebook, which is our page is just Keeping It Real Pod. So just search for that. You'll find us and let us know. Follow us there. But you can also send us suggestions that way as well. And as always, tell a friend if there's any other brokers that are in your office or that you meet out in the field that you think could benefit from listening to what top 1% producers have done to grow their business and what they continue to do, then tell every broker you know about this show. Of course, it's free and it's just a fun way to get everybody the information about how to be a better and more successful realtor out in the Chicagoland area. So thank you so much for continuing to listen. Thanks in advance for telling every broker you know. And on to our interview with Susan Panazzo. Today on the show, we have Susan Panazzo of At Properties. Susan was born and raised on the Illinois-Wisconsin border in Winnebago County, or we were just talking, it's actually in the Rockford area. And she started her career in real estate as a leasing agent in Chicago's downtown rental market, immediately fell in love with all things real estate, obtained her broker license shortly thereafter. Susan's background is in retail and management, and it lent itself to an easy transition into the customer service-oriented business of real estate. Panazzo's rise to success began with a number of rental transactions and home sales. 1 year later, she was hired as the exclusive leasing agent for a large portfolio of luxury properties on Chicago's North Side. The experience of leasing and managing luxury properties gave her a uniquely well-rounded perspective on the multifaceted business of real estate. And this has allowed Panazzo to grow her client base year after year without sacrificing the individualized service she is known for. Clients choose Susan for her experience, expertise, and ethics. She's been recognized by CAR, Chicago Association of Realtors, as a top producer for 3 years running. So welcome, Susan, to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you. We really appreciate your time. I know you're insanely busy, so this is a big deal for us. And I would also like to mention before we get into this that Susan was recommended by a listener, and we're trying to figure out who that is so we can tell Susan who was kind enough to recommend her. You were already on our invite list, but I maybe had not got to you yet. So thankfully, one of the nice listeners out there did. So that's just a call to all listeners. If you have somebody like Susan that you want on the show, shoot us a message and we'll try to get them on. So thanks, by the way, thanks. And tell us about you. So you grew up in Rockford, and then you've been to Chicago for the last 8 years. How did you get here, and why real estate?
Yeah, so I grew up in Rockford. I actually went to college there as well. And I actually, you know, I started working when I was 15. I had a strong work ethic growing up. I got into retail. I was working part-time at the local Rockford Mall while I was going through college.
Have to know, what store did you work at the Rockford Mall?
It was Charlotte Russe. So it's like a fast fashion women's clothing store. So I don't know if you'd be familiar with it.
I'm not, but okay. But anyway, I'm sure some of our listeners would be.
Yeah, I mean, there was about 500 stores, so one in every pretty decently sized mall. And then once I graduated college with my business degree, I did stay in retail at the store management level. I had always wanted to move to Chicago from Rockford, and my company knew that. And so I had told them if we, you know, were opening a new store in the Chicago area, you know, that I wanted it to be mine, that I wanted to move there, and that I wanted to run it. So eventually, our company opened a flagship location at Old Orchard Mall in Skokie. Sure. So that's what brought me here. So I moved here to grand open that store. So I was there for about a year. And at that point, I had been in retail for probably about 10 years. I was getting a little burnt out of the industry.
Well, yeah, we should pause for a second. Retail is insanely difficult, right? It's taxing on the body.
Absolutely.
It's taxing on the mind. And you're just constantly dealing with customer service issues. Some of them obviously positive, some of them challenging. But I know that that's where we're headed, is talking about how that really helped, you know, you with the skill set to become a successful realtor. But I'm sorry, go right ahead.
Absolutely. So, you know, after those 10 years, I was definitely looking for a change. I had always had an interest in real estate, but I wasn't really sure how to get started. So, you know, one day I just kind of took the plunge and decided to face the unknown and transition into real estate. Luckily, the experience that I already had in sales and management kind of lent itself to somewhat of an easy transition into real estate. You know, both industries are customer service focused.
Right.
Industries require a lot of managing of moving parts. Also being able to interact with different personalities. You know, when I ran the flagship location, I had a staff of 80. And so I had four.
That's amazing.
Yeah, four full-time managers working for me and then about 75 part-time associates. So a lot of different personalities to interact with and manage. And I really think that helped setting me up for success. You know, also in both industries, no 2 days are the same. And then also working, you know, already being used to working nights and weekends, I think definitely helped.
I was going to say, hours have not changed.
Right, exactly. I don't think I've ever had a weekend off, but that's okay.
So what year did you get into real estate? Was that how many years ago?
So 2011 is when I got into it. And then, 2012 is when I got my broker's license.
So for a year you were predominantly doing leasing, I'm assuming.
I think it was the end of 2011. I started working for a leasing company. And then just some colleagues that I had there were telling me, you know, that they were getting licensed as a broker. Sure. I immediately said, me too. How do I do it? And then I started looking for real estate assistant jobs because I knew nothing. I thought, okay, I should go in as an assistant to someone that is successful, knows what they're doing. I ended up linking up with a successful broker. She hired me on as her assistant before I was even licensed. But, you know, basically she said, there's only a certain number of things you can do for me when you're unlicensed. Once you're right. licensed, you can do so much more. You can make more money. So that kind of lit a fire for me. And, you know, I was licensed as quickly as possible. I think with the classes, it was about 2 months later.
Right.
I had my license and then I worked for her. She was busy, so I was busy. So I was fully immersed right away in the world of kind of being a successful broker.
And then at what point did you step away and say, I want to do all this on my own?
It was about a year and a year, maybe about a year and a half after getting licensed that I started to do it on my own.
And were you still, so when you went on your own, I'm assuming you, well, had you built up a lot of relationships where you could then farm for deals, or were you like basically starting over at that point?
So I actually did have, when I first started out, I connected completely on my own with a few international investors who were looking to invest in Chicago.
Very, very smart.
Yeah. So I worked, you know, to find them investment properties. And then, I mean, and they were high price points. You know, they were $100,000 sure. properties, $200,000 properties. The majority of them had actually lived in Chicago at one point, but then moved overseas. They just wanted to, you know, put some roots down in Chicago. So I, you know, helped them find the properties. At times it was sight unseen. They trusted
me. Yeah.
Then they, you know, purchase the properties. Then from there, I would find the tenant. And, you know, I still work with all of those clients today. So year after year, as their tenants turn, those are rental listings that I get.
Yeah, right. So it's really important we like pause for a second and sort of make mention of how important and lucrative these relationships are, because not only are you helping them acquire properties, which, by the way, a lot easier than working with a traditional consumer buyer, right? Because these are people that largely just want to see the numbers, I'm assuming, in most cases. Cash flow positive. When am I going to recoup? You know, what sort of return on investment could I expect with rent? And then so Susan is constantly just looking for deals, providing those offers, and then of course, hopefully making those transactions. And then, I have to find a renter for the place. So those are tremendous relationships. I'm sure you covet those quite a bit.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, when you're working with investors, it's, I don't want to say easier, but there's less emotion involved. So, it's black or white. Is this going to work financially or is it not? So those relationships in the beginning and still are, were very important to grow and to maintain.
Are you also doing the property management too, or do you farm that out somewhere?
So typically the owners do farm that out. There is some property management that I have done in the past. So a couple... let's see, about almost 4 years ago, I got connected to a group of investment property owners who had a large portfolio of luxury properties on the north side. And they actually took me on as their exclusive leasing agent for their properties.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm going to pause for a second. That is a huge deal. That is a big thing that Susan is just sort of explaining because it's part of her history. But to be chosen to do that is a very nice feather in her cap, which obviously means she's a very good broker, because that's a very important and unique and rare thing to have. So congrats on that.
Absolutely. Thank you. The portfolio ranges from anything from an 8-unit building in Avondale to a 30-unit building in Bucktown. And it does account for a good chunk of my rental business, which I think last year I was right around 100 transactions a year.
Amazing.
And then, another piece of this is then turning those rental clients into buyers.
Yes. What percentage, and I know it's probably not a super easy number to figure, but like on a year-to-year basis, are there a certain number of sales that just naturally come from these previous renters?
That is a hard number to figure out. I would say, maybe around 20% convert into buyers.
Wow, that's a pretty awesome relationship too. So like all this stemmed from initially, leasing, I guess. First finding the properties for the investors and then the leasing side. So that's awesome, huge.
Right, yeah. So when I'm going through the leasing transaction with them, I always make sure, I'm treating them with respect, I'm being responsive throughout the whole rental transaction. Because, if they are unrepresented, then I can keep in touch with them and let them know that I can help them in the future, when they are, looking to possibly rent another place or hopefully buy.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because, a good percentage of those people at some point are going to buy. They're going to use a broker. Why not the person that helped them find the previous apartment, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Like they're either going to use you or a friend they know who's a realtor. And if they... if you're the one that's built that relationship, they're more likely to use you anyway. I think so many brokers who do leasing just forget about the renter after the person moves in. And I suspect maybe they call them 11 months in, say, hey, it's your lease is coming due. What do you think you're going to do? But I suspect there's not this constant, just staying in touch and being like, hey, have you thought about buying? And let's, if you want to talk about that, we can, and all of that. So congrats to you on that. I want to talk best practices, because you're somebody that has managed a huge team in retail. You've worked under a top producer. You are now a top producer. I want to know what have you learned over the years? What works for you and what advice do you have for people out there who are brokers looking to better their production?
Sure. So, and I think you'll hear this from the majority of top producing brokers. The majority of my business is referral based.
Right.
I believe that my clients continue to bring me their business and also feel confident in referring me to their friends, family, colleagues, due to my organizational and communication skills. And I know that those sound like such basic concepts, but right. It really has been one of or two of the main components to my success. You know, taking the extra time to prepare for a listing presentation, fully educating myself on comps, taking that extra step to make sure I'm as knowledgeable and prepared as possible for my client. You know, I'm the type of person to dot my I's, cross my T's. I triple check everything. Like, I just never really want to be caught off guard.
Right. And you're going to be caught off guard anyway, so you might as well minimize that as much
exactly.
as humanly possible. And also, too, and I would be curious to get your take on this, in particular with first-time homebuyers, they are completely, in almost all cases, I know I was, completely unaware of the process, how it works. I was just doing another podcast interview earlier today, and I was saying how I didn't even know how mortgages worked, and I was too embarrassed to ask. I mean, this is before I started looking to buy a place, but I could have probably bought a place a year before I ended up doing just because I didn't understand it. And I,
sure.
And nobody really sought me out to educate me about it. And thank goodness I did find somebody who educated me about it. But I think a big assumption that oftentimes realtors make is they're like, oh, people know when they want to buy or sell something. I'm like, I don't always know that that's true. And also as they start to go through that process, it's particular if it's the first time, they are completely in the dark how any and all of it works. And they really rely so much, or they should rely so much on the broker. And that's what you're talking about. So,
sure. Yeah, I think there's you know, a lot of people out there that probably don't think they can afford to buy that actually can as well.
Yes.
So finding those people and educating them on what a mortgage is and what your payment's going to look like is really important. And then once you get that client as a buyer, I always have a presentation in the office, go through what the contract looks like, what's going to happen the second that you like a place and want to put it in an offer, you know, baby steps through the process. And if, you know, they do know everything, I ask them to stop me. To save our time. But if they don't, I'll explain everything in great detail so they know what to expect.
Yeah. And I do just want to go back to one point that you average a rental every like 3 to 4 days. That's a very impressive numbers. And that is incredibly rare, you know, among all producers. You probably do more rentals than anyone I've ever talked to. And that I know that isn't necessarily your primary focus. It just happens to be what happens as a result of working with all these great investors. So it's like, I don't think Susan said, I want to be able to do 100 rentals every single year, but she's able to do 100 rentals every year by doing all the other things. And then a certain percentage of those turn into buyers or they want to move and maybe they use Susan again to move to a different apartment. I mean, that's really a pretty impressive thing that you've built.
Absolutely. So yeah, like I said, just maintaining the relationships, you know, even when they're just tenants, just being respectful to them and communicating with them so that, you know, I'm here for them if they ever need me.
Yeah. By the way, how do you stay in touch with the client after they've moved in?
So, you know, I will, if they're unrepresented, you know, then I'll reach out, make sure everything's going okay. I have an Excel spreadsheet of when, you know, leases are expiring. So I usually reach out to them, you know, about 60 days in advance, maybe a little bit, just to touch base with them, see if they're planning to stay, planning to move, what their plan is.
Yeah. And I'll bet you, and again, I'm just guessing at this, but I'll bet you most brokers who do leasing do not even maintain a spreadsheet of, hey, my client's lease is coming up in 3 months. I maybe should check in. So just even doing that and having that organization, I think is.
Yeah. And it's so easy to do. Just every time you sign a lease, just throw it on the spreadsheet and a year later, you'll be thankful you did it.
Yeah. And I, you know, I have always thought too that, you know, there's always so many good reasons to contact someone after the transaction's closed. So like a renter, a lot of times brokers might say, well, they move in. What am I going to do? What else should I talk to them about? It's like, well, maybe call them 3 weeks in and say, hey, if you haven't gotten rental insurance, I have a couple of good insurance agents you may want to reach out to, or maybe a month in, go, hey, it's been a month. How do you like it? Is everything still going cool? You're going smoothly? Great. Maybe 3 months in, hey, you know, I know you're still new to the apartment, but if you're thinking about buying a place in the next year, I'd love to talk to you about it, right? Or at least at 60 days out, you're like, hey, by the way, your lease is coming due. What are you thinking? So you're doing a lot of that. And I just think that is so huge. And it's so easy and sort of common sense, like you were saying earlier about customer service and really taking care of it. But I suspect most people don't do it. And
sure.
Huge opportunity for someone like you who's organized, who's willing to do the work, obviously, and you're successful. Any other best practices outside of what we've mentioned? Like, are you doing any other marketing efforts that seem to be working? And again, I know that most of your business is referral-based.
Yeah. So like I said, the majority of my business is referral based. And I think that something that kind of makes me stand out amongst other brokers, because there's a lot of us, is that, you know, I continue to grow my business, but not at the expense of service. So I've managed to grow and not really lose touch of the one thing that's made me successful. And that's the strong client relationships. When it becomes less transactional and more about maintaining and building on the client relationship, you know, it becomes very easy to maintain.
Yeah, I agree. You're absolutely right. And I've always said, and again, this is somebody who I've worked with hundreds and hundreds of agents. We've interviewed a lot for even for this podcast. And it's like the ones who actually treat these relationships as actual relationships tend to get that repeat business and the referrals. But that requires a plan. And a lot of people, I think, just haven't yet put that plan together of like, what does that actually look like? What is that communication strategy? How am I going to stay in touch? And, you know, you're pretty systematized, I think, which is pretty great. So you have those, you know, those types of strategies.
Absolutely. Yeah. I feel that, you know, is one of the things that kind of distinguishes me from other brokers.
How important is it to you to sort of like have a specialty where you're like, okay, I can't do everything, but here are the things I'm really, really good at. Has that been a big thing for you in your business?
Yeah. I mean, I try to keep all of my business, you know, downtown. I sure. Obviously, you know, can branch out to the suburbs, but I can't be in 10 places at once. So, you know, as of right now, I'm pretty busy as it is. So I'm happy to kind of just focus on the downtown areas, focus on the markets that I know very, very well. And just kind of keep my attention there.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, I've always thought that people who, and again, that being said, understanding that your clients sometimes move out to areas that are not your primary focus and you can still assist them, but having your true north, excuse me, being like downtown or, you know, certain neighborhoods or certain types of clients, I think is really important. Just makes life a little bit easier too, where you don't have to know everything about every area, but you can know everything about one or two areas and really kind of hit that. And that's really important because brokers become really valuable. If like there was a person, and I don't know what firm, I think they may work for like Berkshire Hathaway, but I can't remember their name, but they're like Mr. River North and that's their brand. And this person's done like, I don't know if you've ever seen, there was like billboards and this person had done hundreds of sales in River North in like just a handful of years. It's like, well, that guy probably knows River North better than me, you know,
because, right.
and like you wouldn't probably reach out to Mr. River North if you wanted to move to Lake Forest, right? I mean, it's maybe you would, but like this person was sort of savvy enough to brand themselves, you know, whether you like, you know, like that type of branding or not, it's a good idea to at least say, hey, I'm the River North guy. And so, you know, you've done that, you know, without maybe calling yourself the certain, you know, neighborhood person, you've sort of done that just instinctively. So you had written and told us about your, well, a furry fetish party. And I definitely, you know, a lot of times we don't get to these questions because, you know, but this one really piqued my interest. So could you tell us that story?
Sure. So whenever I take on a new rental listing, I reach out to the current tenants. Usually I have a relationship with them already, but if not, I introduce myself, say I'm going to be showing your place. I will try to give you as much notice as possible. If you, you know, this is going to work better for all of us. If you have the home in showing condition, if it's clean, presentable, the quicker, you know, that'll get it rented quicker, which means I'll stop bugging you, just offering that incentive usually works. But I mean, obviously, some people are going to ignore that warning. So I was doing a showing. It was a really nice unit in Bucktown, and it was a Saturday morning around 10 a.m. The tenants were noticed. I usually go in just a few minutes early to turn on lights and make sure everything is ready. But I had gotten there right at the showing time, and the clients were already outside waiting for me.
Sure.
So we walked up together, knocked on the door per the usual, no answer. So then we walked in, and we had realized quickly that there was quite a party that was going on the night before, and that the party was still going on just based off of loud music and things that we saw laying around.
That's an impressive long party at this point.
I know, 10 a.m. on a Saturday.
Yeah, that's impressive.
So we walked into the living room and we discovered two grown adults that were sitting on the couch wide awake. One was in a full-size beaver costume, and then the other was in a full-size koala or some sort of bear costume. Based on what else was in the room, I quickly realized that it must have been the aftermath of some sort of furry fetish party. I don't know if that's what you call them.
I think just saying furry is you don't need the fetish. We know. Okay. And by the way, okay. I've never revealed this, but I was in the beaver costume. And I'm now really embarrassed that you're bringing up this story.
It all comes full circle.
Yeah. So what did you do?
So the furries, I guess. They were a tad thrown off, but then they graciously invited us in. I was obviously mortified to be discovering this in front of the clients. We quickly took a look around, exited, and then burst into laughter, obviously. But the best part of the story is that the clients actually ended up renting the unit.
Wow. You'd need it fumigated and like bleached from floor to ceiling before I would move in there. But hey, it must have been a nice place.
Yeah, it was.
Oh my gosh. That's well, you know, it's funny, like you'll see documentaries or news stories about, you know, people who are into things like that. And you're like, yeah, I know it's real, but it doesn't feel real because you're like, I've never met anybody, or because it's obviously something like that too is probably somewhat secretive. And then and there it is. And then you walked right in the middle of it.
There it is, right in front of you, Saturday at 10 a.m. Oh,
that must have been a smell. I just think of like just being in a costume that long. There's got to be a weird smell. And I'm going to go vomit right immediately after this. Well, that's really funny. Let me ask you this to wrap up. Anyone sure. who's listening, and you did give some good advice. Is there any other advice you have? Let's go brand new broker. Somebody just got their license and is – because have a lot of those people who write into us. They're like, I just got my license. And they're like, you don't ask enough questions about what should I do the moment I get my license. I would love to hear what you would say today to somebody who's new.
Sure. And I actually get asked this question quite often, and my response is always the same. The technique that I use worked for me. I know that it wouldn't work for everybody, but I really encourage people to seek out some sort of real estate assistant position and get in, maybe get on a team, start sitting open houses or being a showing assistant for someone that is already successful, someone that is already established, someone that's busy, someone that you can help out, you know, with their business so that you can learn best practices. You know, you can learn how to write up a contract, things that, you know, they don't teach you when you're studying for your real estate exam.
Right.
I really think that just immediately being fully immersed in the real estate world is very important, because if you don't have that influence, then, and you don't, you know, the phone's not ringing, you're getting frustrated, you know, it can totally turn you off from the business if you aren't really immersed in all of the great things, you know, that the business brings.
You're so right. And I also think that even if you, like, the whole reason we do this show is to literally just ask top producers, like, hey, what do you do every day? How do you build your business? And oftentimes for people that have listened, and I know you've listened and we have a lot of listeners, they, you know, I'm sure that it's a lot of hearing the same thing over and over again, because you know, top producers are largely similar in the sense of what the work they do. They may specialize in different types of clients or different areas of the city or the suburbs, or, you know, whether they work with investors or traditional buyers and sellers. But at the end of the day, like the day-to-day work is similar, and top producers all share a lot of common ground there, right? And, you know, when we do this show to like get that information. And so I suspect that everyone who's listening, unless you just work at a firm where there's only one other broker, there's probably top producers in your office that you can reach out to. And, you know, either like Susan was saying, you know, hey, maybe offer to be their assistant, or at the very least, just ask them and interview them and to ask them, what do you do? How do you do a listing presentation? What do you do when you take a client out, et cetera? And I suspect, like, I know at our firm, we have 600 brokers. I bet most of our brand new brokers don't do that. They don't reach out to the, to our, even our own top producers. So I think that's awesome that you did that.
Yeah. And that's actually one of the things I love about working for At Properties. They've really fostered a collaborative culture among their brokers. So there's always brokers willing to help each other out. You know, I've learned and continue to learn and grow a ton from my fellow brokers. I feel like as brokers, we need to exist in a culture of collaboration, you know, versus competition. So At Properties is really great at fostering that sort of environment.
100%. And I would say the vast majority of the people that we've interviewed on this show, and we interview people from every firm, but more At Properties people have been on the show than any other. And I don't work at At Properties, and I haven't specifically reached out to At Properties people, but just this idea that just about any time we've ever reached out to an At Properties person and said, hey, we'd love to have you on the show, they all, and most people say yes in the industry. It's not like we get a lot of no's, but we get more yeses from At Properties people. And I don't think that's just coincidental. So I think, you know, what Susan's saying, and obviously she works there, but I don't. And I'm telling you that I have received that same sort of willingness to sort of, you know, even be on this podcast. So I think that's echoed all throughout their culture. And obviously they're doing a lot of things right because they have 3,000 agents. So they must know what they're doing, and people really love it there. So definitely hats off to At Properties. So Susan, let's wrap up, because I want everybody who's listening, if, for example, we don't just have brokers that listen, of course we have buyers, sellers, renters, et cetera, investors. If anyone is interested in working with you directly, what's the best way they should reach out to you?
Yeah, so anyone can reach me on my cell anytime. The number is 773-899-6272. And then email also works. So it's S Panazzo. So that's S and then PANOZZO at atproperties.com.
Awesome. Well, Susan, thank you so much for being on the podcast. We appreciate it. And we know how busy you are, and we're gearing up for the weekend here. So you probably have a busy weekend ahead of you. So I will let you go and you can get to back to work. But thank you for spending a few minutes with us. We appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.